This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
This is your current affairs program, The Rainbow Report, on Joy 94.9.
Good evening. This is Cathy Anderson welcoming you to The Rainbow Report, Joy's program of news and current affairs with a queer bent. On to the serious stuff. Tonight on The Rainbow Report, we'll be talking to Corey Earlham of the Australian Coalition for Equality about the possibility of a civil union ceremony being introduced in the ACT. Members of the Greens there have announced today that they will attempt to amend the Territory's Civil Partnership Act. It's never a fulfilled week, at least for me, without some discussion of MTV, VJ and out lesbian Ruby Rose. She's joined a bunch of other high-profile people to launch the This Is Oz project, which is an online photo gallery for celebrities and plebs alike to fight homophobia. The AIDS Council of New South Wales CEO Stevie Clayton will tell us more a bit later. Now, any young queer leaders out there who are wanted to join up to a new project called Q&A Victoria. This will train people each year to focus on preventing STIs and make social change in our community. The coordinator, Abigail Elliott, will join us later on the line to explain. And later on, Amy Henderson from the West's Queer Paper out in Perth will fill us in on the major news from that part of the world, including a gay man jailed for 25 years for killing his lover. And finally, Tim Wright from the Equal Love Rally will drop into the studio to rev up interest in this year's event. Joining me in the studio tonight are two of Melbourne's sharpest queer journalists, Andy Noonan from Southern Star and the editor of MCV, Andrew Shaw. A big jolly winter's welcome to you both. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having us.
Excellent. Thank you.
Oh, right. Not so sharp. Short and sweet, really.
Kat. Well, sharpish.
As sharp as you get.
Right. Okay. We're in for a treat tonight, listeners. They're all worded up. Civil unions is a perennially feisty issue, particularly in the ACT, where the government there wanted to bring in legislation which included a ceremony. The ceremony was knocked back by the federal government, which has veto powers over ACT bills, although the bill was passed. It's been a year since then, and ceremonies are back on the agenda. Corey Earlham of the Australian Coalition for Equality is on the phone now to give us the lowdown. Good evening, Corey.
Good evening, Cathy and team. How are you tonight?
We're jolly cold, but we're all battling on.
Good to hear.
So, look, we're all a bit interested in this new initiative by the Greens. Can you tell us a bit of what's going on?
Look, it's the same old story that it was back when the federal government knocked it back. The ACT members of parliament feel that they should be able to have a legal ceremony as part of their civil partnership scheme. Unfortunately, though, because the federal government's knocked it back twice under the Howard era and threatened to knock it back once under the Rudd era, all the ACT currently has is an administrative ceremony. And basically, you know, to explain the differences, when somebody goes and gets married, they say a bunch of words between a man and a woman, exclusion of all others for life, or words to that effect, and that's involved in part of the creation of their marriage. That's part of the legal process that you go through. With an administrative ceremony, it's purely symbolic. It doesn't have that legal standing, and the ACT government wants to look at that, or members of the ACT Parliament at least want to look at that to be able to have that legal standing in a ceremony.
So in terms of the government there, what sort of swing do the Greens have? Because I'm assuming if they didn't get it up last time, they're going to need some pretty hefty support in order for that to occur this time.
Well, look, the Greens have the balance of power this time round. They had to form government with the ALP in a minority government situation. But unfortunately, the Attorney General, who previously had put up this legislation, has indicated that because the federal government doesn't seem to have changed their view, he's not sure that it would get up. So really, it falls on Kevin Rudd and the Attorney General Robert McClellan to just really look at this and try and explain to Australians why an administrative ceremony is okay, but a legal ceremony is not.
Corey, I'm just interested in the timing of this. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that that this was quashed by the federal government. Do you think it could potentially be a bit too soon for this sort of move and seen as sort of more antagonistic than anything else?
Look, I think that it's important for them to come back. The thing to note about the powers that the federal government has over the ACT Parliament is that they have a window of 6 months before in which they have to pass laws that override the ACT Parliament. After that 6 months, they can't do it. So the Greens have waited a year since it went in. It shows their commitment to wanting a legal ceremony, and it continues putting the pressure on the ALP.
Oh, hi, Corey. It's Andrew. Would this be the sort of thing that a government, any government, would probably consider in a second or third term? And do you think that's the kind of game that maybe Rudd's playing, that he's not alarming the public too much, especially with the current financial crisis, et cetera, et cetera, but it could be something he introduces should he be re-elected?
I haven't seen any indication that's his view. He's stood by the party policy that says state-based schemes will not mimic marriage. There hasn't been any indication coming from him that this is something they'll consider in the second year.
Is it likely, Corey, do you think that this is, as Andy said, it's maybe a little bit too soon, but if the Attorney-General's not really even getting behind it, what sort of legs has it got? Is it more of a PR exercise?
Look, I suppose the thing to note here is that the Attorney-General has been behind this three times in trying to get the civil partnership scheme up in the first place. So as a matter of principle, he's on the record of supporting legal ceremonies. What he's saying is that until the federal government changes their mind, there's not much hope in us doing it. Even if we put it up and we went through, it's likely that the federal government would knock it back. So he's being respectful of his federal colleagues. I don't think they would say this is a PR exercise. This is something that the Greens have spoken about ever since the civil partnership scheme got put up without a legal ceremony.
Now, do you think, though, that, I mean, is there any indication from the federal government that they may be, you know, may overlook it, may turn a blind eye to this and do so, and just let them get on with it?
Well, interestingly, they had the six-month window after the administrative ceremonies were put in and didn't seem to kick up a fuss then, so I can't see why they would kick up a fuss now, but that's for them to come back and say what their position is.
Be interesting, I don't know what these guys as well think, if something like this did happen in the ACT, what sort of ramifications would it have for the rest of the country, do you think?
Well, huge. I mean, basically the government's been really firm on not allowing ceremonies. In fact, the Victorian Register has come about without ceremonies in place. So, I mean, I guess there'd be argument to say that if this happened in the ACT, it could very well happen in Victoria as well.
So, Corey, what are your thoughts on that? I mean, the key problem with having a ceremony is that it's too marriage-like. I mean, we're you know, butting our heads against the marriage brick wall again.
Look, the case for the other states is the ACT already has an administrative ceremony and they don't. So before we even start talking about what's on the table by the Greens now, the other states are already behind in that respect. In regards to them introducing a ceremony, there's constitutional questions of if it's too marriage-like, does it fall under the federal government's power of marriage for the states or not? That's something to work out when you see the detail. But there needs to be a policy position that they have the desire to do it. The ALP still won't support marriage at a federal level. It helps the conversation continue along.
Well, thanks for that, Corey. And while we've got you on the line, I did also want to cover with you the issue of the Moscow Pride. I know that you are involved with Doug and we're looking at and interviewing Nikolai Alexeev, who was organising Moscow's Pride. And he was in jail at some point, and the Lord Mayor or the Mayor of Moscow put a dampener on it. Jim, can you give us an update on what's gone on there?
This was just outrageous, and this is the sort of difference between gay and lesbian politics around the world. Over in Moscow, it's legal to be gay, but the mayor of Moscow wouldn't allow gay and lesbian people to protest or march to celebrate gay pride. So what they did was there's seven roads into Moscow, and they had the police block off all seven roads the morning of the event to try and capture Nikolai and the other protesters. They had photos of what they looked like. They were stopping cars. Obviously, Nikolai and Nat had found this out through media contacts. They caught the train to get just past the blockade. Then they caught three different trucks to be able to get into this area. And this is how far it went. Because you have to tell the media about this just before it happens, the police know where and when it's going to happen. So they chose a place which is quite common for brides and grooms to go and have their photo taken. And the protest was in the form of a wedding party. Nikolai was the groom and somebody dressed up in drag to be the woman in a wedding dress, to be able to divert attention and walk through the crowds without being noticed by the police that were there. The police, it's the former KGB, were there along with riot squads. There was forcefulness in removing them. People were arrested and then released internationally. Visitors to the country were released almost straight away. Most embassies were quite helpful with that. But then if they walked back and started talking to the journalist and explaining why they were there, they were arrested again. It's an outrage to see that somewhere in a Western civilization still has this sort of treatment for gay and lesbian people just because they wanted to celebrate their pride.
And yet there was a chance that the toppers were going to save them. Wasn't that right, Corey?
Chance that the, sorry, the who was
the toppers. Save? Did you hear about the Eurovision Song Contest entrance, the toppers from the Netherlands, who said that should the Moscow police crack down too heavily on the gay pride, then they were going to withdraw from the competition?
Yeah, look, it's interesting. My sources from people who were involved in the protest actually think that they were doing it for a bit of publicity because they
it didn't work.
They had spoken to the protesters and they said to stay away at the last minute, and they actually hadn't been in contact with them at all. So yes, it was good that they were out there. The Eurovision Netherlands entry was saying that they would not go to Eurovision, but they did go, so it looked like a bit of good PR for them.
Corey, one of the things that came out, I know Peter Tatchell, who was involved, I believe, in the protests, said that although it only happened for a very small amount of time and people were detained, the media coverage was actually quite large across the world.
Oh, look, just about every coverage that talked about the files of Eurovision mentioned this protest, and it's quite ironic. It's the extreme homophobia of the mayor that fueled the fire to get the media attention by overreacting in the way that he did. So he's kind of sort of created this storm himself. But look, this sort of tactics is similar to what had to be done in Tasmania's law reform in the ban on beer and things like that. We've gone past that as a country in Australia, but we need to keep remembering that there are still 80 countries around the world that criminalise homosexuality, and five of them that put people to death because of it.
I mean, it's interesting, isn't it, that there's one mayor saying, I think he compared homosexuality to a sort of a Satanist cult or something. He called it satanic. And yet here, just last week, I was next standing there in the Bourke Street Mall here in Melbourne, where our own Lord Mayor, Robert Doyle, was actually, you know, writing a sign in his own hand saying that, you know, homophobia is, you know, bad, etc., etc., and posing for a photograph. It's interesting how far behind Russia really is in terms of its attitude, or at least in terms of its politics.
And look, to Australia's credit, it's also kudos to us for being so far ahead.
Mm. Oh. It's funny that you would expect what we saw in Russia to happen to a country where homosexuality is still illegal, but that's actually not the case. So there seems to be this really odd almost double standard that, you know, you can be gay, but don't let anyone know, and as long as you're not in anyone's face or behind closed doors, it's okay.
Yeah, you can be gay, but not out. Yeah. Not out in the streets, certainly.
That's for sure.
But in a slightly lesser extreme, it's the same as what happens here in Australia. We can have laws for couples that can be recognised, but we can't get married. It's on Sunrise on Channel 7. We had the ACL CEO, Jim Wallace, on there comparing same-sex marriage to marrying a cat.
Yeah, that's right there.
This is outstanding. I love that. The level of debate in this country is certainly bizarre. Mm. But look, thank you very much, Corey. We appreciate your time and taking the effort to give us a call tonight and run through those things with us.
Not a problem. Have a great night, guys. Bye.
Right, that was Corey Earlham there. We've got a text message in come from Ant, who's responding to our earlier discussion about the ACT legislation, which is the Greens are putting up an amendment to the Partnership Act to include a ceremony. He says, this is a PR stunt by the Greens. They know full well it won't pass. Legal ceremony and administrative ceremony is semantics, as they're granted the same anyway. Thanks for that, Ant. Coming up next, we're going to talk to the ACON CEO, Stevie Clayton, about the This Is Oz project. You're listening to the Rainbow Report on Joy 94.9.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9.
Keeping the GLBTI community up to date, this is the Rainbow Report.
And welcome back. You're listening to me, Cathy Anderson, on the Rainbow Report with Andy Noonan and Andrew Shaw in the studio. We're joined on the line now by Stevie Clayton. She's the CEO of ACON, the AIDS Council of New South Wales. They've got a new project called This Is Oz, which hopes to fight anti-violence against homophobic behaviour in society. It's an online photo project, and she's going to tell us all about it. Good evening.
Good evening.
So the This Is Oz website, can you tell us how it started and why because you involve quite a lot of celebrities. Can you tell us a bit about it?
Sure. We were thinking about what we might do for Idaho this year, the International Day Against Homophobia. And someone called Jackie Brawl, who works for the police force in New South Wales, had seen a website in America called Faces of Us or Faces of US. And we thought it looked pretty good, and so we thought we could take that website and develop it further and start using it. And the basic idea is that people take photos of themselves or get a friend to take a photo of them holding a sign that gives a message about social inclusion, equality, against homophobia, whatever message in that sort of vein that people feel strongly about and want to put out there. And then they load it onto the website, and what we're trying to get is lots and lots of faces and messages from people that create that sense of Australia being a place that is inclusive and a place where everyone can belong.
Well, yeah. Stevie, you've got some pretty high profile people there. Reese Bobridge, I believe, is one of them. Matthew Mitchum, Bob Brown, Ruby Rose. How did you engage these people? Was it difficult to approach them?
It was remarkably easy. We started out by writing to a whole lot of people. We just brainstormed a list of a combination of two things, really. One, it's about famous people who would attract people's attention, but also part of it is about creating role models for young people. So we thought about people who are popular opinion leaders for young people. So people who, when they say homophobia is not cool, it's actually going to help to reduce violence. It's going to help make some young people who might have been bashers stop and think about it. And it'll make young people in the GLBT community, you know, feel prouder and feel like they can aspire to more things. So we thought about both of those sorts of groups, and then we just wrote to a whole lot of people. And then we started passing around networks and saying, who do you know who is famous, or do you know someone who's famous who'd be willing to go and ask them for us? And then what we did was loaded up the website with some images first, so that when we did the launch, we would already have images there. And as soon as we did, we had heaps of people come to us and want to be included, particularly politicians, which has been a big surprise. So lots of New South Wales politicians have been lining up to get themselves on the site.
Have they all been in inner city electorates?
No.
That's a very cynical view.
We were just looking at some of the images and saying we should have been even clearer than we've been with some of the labelling, because we've got two National Party MPs from rural electorates.
That's wow. Great. That's excellent. Because some of the messages that people are holding up are quite profound. And Ruby Rose's, for instance, is, you know, what's hate got to do with it? Obviously, she's a music person. But love thy gay neighbour. Mostly messages about, of being inclusive, as you say. Is that basically part of the message that we just want to get out there and make sure that people know that, you know, it's okay to be gay? Is it being visible? Is that where it's sort of coming from?
Yeah, we're hoping for a lot from the site. So we've got a range of different ideas about the things we hope it will evolve into, but it's very much a community site. So it's going to end up being driven by the messages that people put there. But what we're encouraging people to do is take that really positive approach. So rather than it being, you know, anti anything or negative, make it as much as we can positive. So about inclusion, about there being a place for all of us. So those really strong positive messages.
Stevie, has there been any effect in the mainstream media? Have the celebrities sort of done anything on that front in terms of making this issue more mainstream?
No, we haven't had that much attention from the mainstream media yet, but you know, it was only launched last Friday, so it's early days yet. But we're just starting. The first thing was getting it up, and we've spent the week sort of with a few hiccups around the technical things and a bit of a delay in getting images up there. So we're ironing all of that out at the moment so that we can get it a bit smoother. And then we're moving on to the next stage, which is about talking with people and groups about other things that they can do. So we're starting to put downloads on the site so that groups can actually take the posters and download them and print them up and use them. We're putting information packages that people can download. One of the things we were discussing as a potential is the big posters that we've got of some of the celebrities that we used for the launch in Martin Place, right in the middle of Sydney in a lunchtime, creating some poster formats on the website where people can put their own picture in it and print it off and have a poster if they want. Or groups can create posters with themselves using different images that they want to use. What we've had is some non-government organisations come to us and say that they're now planning to have whole staff training days where they're going to shut the organisation and get all of their staff into a training course where they talk about GLBT community awareness and homophobia and all of those issues, and then at the end of the day get all of their staff to do signs and then load up their images onto the website.
Stevie, originally ACOM would have stood for AIDS Council of New South Wales. I was reading an article talking about in future organisations like PLWHA, and I think it might have been Southern Star actually.
Annie. Yes, it was.
Thank you.
I wrote it.
Good on you. Great article.
Yeah, look at the love fest that's going on.
And they say we hate each other. And it was interesting because it was they want to downplay the whole AIDS word, that word AIDS, and it just occurred to me that. In effect, you are moving on. Not that you're abandoning those responsibilities, but that it's interesting to be at a point where PLWHA, VAC down here and ACOM seem to be taking on other responsibilities. For example, this campaign, which may not have been considered a traditional HIV/AIDS organisation campaign, say, even 8-9 years ago.
We went through a huge planning process in 2000 where we were looking at the impact that the advent of antiretrovirals in 96 had had on the way that gay men saw HIV in their lives. And we had a big 18-month consultation process, and what we saw was that HIV, whilst incredibly important, obviously, had taken a place where it sat alongside a whole lot of other health issues. And what we decided was that we needed to restructure our organisation so that we became a population-based health organisation. So doing broader GLBT community health meant that we put HIV into the context that it existed in gay men's lives and in the GLBT community. And what we did as we built new programs was look at those areas of health that most directly impact on HIV. So, for instance, the first major program that we built was drug and alcohol. It obviously has a huge impact and is important to our communities in and of itself, but it also impacts in terms of transmission of bloodborne viruses, but also around decision-making around safe sex practices. So there's a direct link that helps us to do better HIV work, but it also is important all on its own. And then we've moved into mental health, that is exactly the same sort of thing, important on its own, but we know that issues around anxiety and depression also impact on decision-making making about risk practices. And so we've gradually built our programs like that until we have the spread of programs that we think are the most important for our community and the most directly relate to the needs of positive people and our work in HIV prevention. And when we look now at the rates of HIV transmission in New South Wales, it's indeed one of the few places in the world where we've had a stable rate of transmission for now 11 years.
Stevie, look, this is Oz. The project is certainly within those boundaries and those parameters, and we'd like to let our listeners know how to get involved, because I'm sure there's a lot of people out there who are already penciling in their signs. So the website is thisisoz.com.au.
That's right.
With an OZ. And so people can actually upload their own photos now. Can they do that now?
Yep, they just go there and there's a step-by-step process for them that helps them log on and load it up. There is a little time delay because we make sure that we just check that there's no offensive photos going up.
Yep.
So we just go through and check on them before we release them onto the site.
Right.
And I need to mention, of course, that this is a big partnership. It's not just about ACON. And we've got the Attorney General's Department of New South Wales Police, the City of Sydney is a big sponsor. The Education Department is encouraging students above Year 5 in schools to get involved. So it's a whole range of organisations and government departments that are all involved in this process.
Well, thank you so much for your time this evening.
Thank you.
All right, guys, I reckon we should make it our personal project, as well as the listeners out there, to get our own slogans and get our own pictures up there. What do you reckon, Andy? What would your slogan be?
Oh, we actually...
You're up there.
Yeah, we're up there, but I think it's in a different campaign. Mm. This was in Victoria. We had the Stop Homophobia Today.com, which I think was either the Victorian version or a separate...
It's the Victorian... Anti-Violence Project, I think.
Yeah, of Victoria. So it must have been a Victorian campaign. So we're actually up there, right. I believe.
And so am I.
Andrew is as
excellent.
Well.
Mine's a very artistic interpretation.
Oh, right, okay, a little contemporised piece. Yes. Okay, well,
so just you, Kathy.
Okay, well, I'm working on Happy Happy Gay Gay. I reckon that's pretty good. Coming up, we'll be talking to Abigail Elliott from the Q&A Victoria Project about young leaders. You're listening to The Rainbow Report, Joy 94.9.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au.
What's on your mind? SMS on 0427 Joy 949.
Welcome back. Cathy Henderson here in the studio on the Rainbow Report with Andy Noonan and Andrew Shaw in the studio. If you're under 28, out, and always wanted to make a difference within the GLBTI community but wasn't quite sure how, then this next story will take your fancy. Q&A Victoria is a new leadership scheme, and its coordinator Abigail Elliott is on the line now to explain how you can and why you should get involved. Good evening, Abigail.
Hi there.
So Q&A Victoria, it's all about young leaders. Tell us more about it.
Yeah, sure. Look, it's a project that's being run out of Family Planning Victoria. It originated from a program that started off in Sydney last year with a group of young people aged between 18 up to about 28. And it's a type of leadership program for young people in the GLBTI and Q communities who are, I suppose, interested in having an impact in their communities on issues that affect them personally. So that might be something like homophobia, but it could be any issue that they feel like their community needs to tackle.
So you're looking for people aged between 18 and 28, obviously, because it's a youth thing. What other sorts of qualities are you looking for people to join up and do this? Because it's a weekend or four-weekend retreat. It's quite kind of an intensive process, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a pretty intense program. It's a total of about 8 days overall, and it's split from sort of July through till about November when the graduation will be held. And it's the type of program is that it's not a sort of coming out social support group. It's more for young people that I suppose have come through that process and are interested to sort of say, okay, I'm ready to kind of step forward and make a difference to, you know, to issues and to the community. So it's it involves a fairly detailed application, written application, and an endorsement from either an employer or a course coordinator, and also someone else to sort of nominate and say, oh, you know, I think this person should be part of this program. They've shown attributes that mean that they, you know, really want to make a difference. So the type of leadership it is, it's not about sort of going out there and, you know, being a leader from the front. Adaptive leadership is a bit more about, I suppose, energising communities, getting them to think more deeply about issues so that We don't come up with sort of, or try and come up with too simple fixes to social problems, because they're so complex, they require lots of different sort of strategies and lots of different ways of thinking.
Abigail, did you say that you were funded through family planning?
The funding is actually through Department of Human Services, the HIV and Bloodborne Viruses Unit, and it's the project, the funding was put in through Family Planning Victoria in collaboration with a range of partners, including VACHO, the Victorian Aboriginal Community Controlled Health Organisation, and also the Centre for Adolescent Health and Youth Empowerment Against HIV and AIDS. So they're the kind of key partners, and all those organisations are supporting getting the message out there and attempting to get young people on board.
So that's quite a few different organisations with, I presume, quite a few different goals and agendas and aims and what have you. So what is the overarching, if you like, theme of the program?
The main target group is actually young people in regional and rural Victoria. So VACHO are kind of a very key partner in that, because we would like to involve young Indigenous people as much as possible. I suppose the thing that connects everybody, I mean, it was put under a HIV prevention sort of funding stream, and there have been some sort of different hotspots of sort of sexually transmitted infections and HIV increases. So this project, although it's sort of, doesn't directly only focus on HIV prevention, that will be one of the issues that would be discussed, I suppose, in the group work. I suppose all the organisations involved have a passion about empowering young people to take on that sort of next step of leadership.
Hmm. Abigail, is the idea that that young people go on this scheme and then join already established groups that are working towards GLBT rights? Is that the sort of idea that you have?
This program actually sits under a bigger banner of a project called Mind the Gap. And the overarching project also has a social networking component and also a sort of small grants and sort of community awareness raising component to it as well. So the young people who go through this program will be able to tap into some of the other things that are happening. And the idea will be, hopefully, that we can, I suppose, support them when they do want to take positions where on other organisations where they might be on the board, or it may be they want to, establish a network of young people to address an issue in their local community. So they don't have to tap into something existing, but I suppose generally that's the easiest way most of us end up making a difference around an issue.
It sounds like an awesome program for people who do want to make a difference, and we all know that's very important in our community to have people who are, rallying others when we all get a bit lazy.
Yeah.
So I know that the first weekend, it's all kicking off in July, so I'm imagining you're taking applications now. How do people get involved if they want to?
Well, the application form will be loaded on the Family Planning Victoria website early next week.
Mm-hmm. And what's that address?
That's www.fpv.org.au. And alternatively, people can email me directly. I know people probably don't have pen and paper on hand, but that email address is aelliott@fpv.org.au. And I can send them information as soon as it becomes available. And even if people just want to get in touch and ask a few more questions about the program, find out what the commitment is, or even maybe know of someone else who might be interested, I'd love to hear from anybody.
Well, I know Joy has a very young listener base, so I'm sure there's a few people out there who are thinking, my mate would be great at that. So www.fpv for familyplanningvictoria.org.au or aelliott@fpv.org.au to email you the info.
Fantastic.
Well, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it, Abigail.
No worries. Thank you.
You can actually do that, Andy.
I know. I was just going to say, I love that youth is now 18 to 28.
Yeah, well, we're running out of enthusiastic Gen Yers, clearly.
Yeah, don't look at me.
Yeah, you're so way out of it. So am I, actually.
Way out of it.
Coming up, we're going to head west and talk to Amy Henderson from Out in Perth. You're listening to The Rainbow Report on Joy 94.9.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station.
Informing, entertaining and provoking. This is The Rainbow Report.
Welcome back. You're listening to me, Cathy Anderson, on The Rainbow Report. I'm joined in the studio by Andy Noonan and Andrew Shaw. It's time now for a change of theme. We haven't visited Western Australia for a while, so now we're going over to Perth, where Amy Henderson, journalist from Out in Perth, is waiting to fill us in on all the action over there. Hi there, Amy.
Hi there, Cathy.
Rightio. So you've got a couple of top stories in WA this month. We're going to kick off with the recent by-election in the seat of Fremantle. Tell us more.
Well, we had a recent by-election in the seat of Fremantle because it was a seat held by Jim McGuinty, who was both our Attorney General and Minister for Health. And he was instrumental in bringing in the law reform bill for gays and lesbians in Western Australia that equalised the age of consent and gave us adoption rights and IVF rights and things like that.
Well, he sounds like a very great loss to WA.
He was. He's very, very well loved by the gay and lesbian community, so he resigned, and Fremantle was his seat. So we had a by-election, and it was quite an interesting by-election on the weekend, actually, because it's a Labor seat since the 1920s. Very strong
Green
seat. Yeah, been held by Labor since the 1920s. The Liberal Party didn't even bother running a candidate.
Well, there's confidence for you.
Yes, exactly. So they didn't even bother. And the Labor candidate was the mayor for Fremantle, who's had some problems recently. And he lost the seat. The seat went to the Greens, which is sort of good news for gays and lesbians, I guess, because now he's got a seat in the lower house. They've got a seat in the lower house for the first time. And very gay-friendly, of course.
So Adele Carles, if I pronounced her name correctly, can you tell us a bit more about her? What do we know about her?
Not a lot at the moment. She's sort of new on the scene. She's been in politics for a while, but sort of quiet. She doesn't have any specific gay and lesbian policies, but she hasn't actually said anything about gays and lesbians, and we haven't been able to track her down. She's a very busy woman after the election, obviously. Most of her policies around Fremantle, local government, things like a new development that was going up on the beach, and she was against that, which a lot of residents were, and the mayor from Fremantle was for that. So I think that's pretty much what tipped her over the line and got her the seat.
Will she be able to do much, though, being in the lower house?
I'm not sure. We'll have to wait and see, I guess. The Greens are saying it's an enormous victory, and they're very happy with it.
We're all pretty impressed with female politicians from WA because, of course, Louise Pratt, Labor member, is now in the federal parliament and open lesbian and doing some amazing groundwork over there. So I don't know.
Yeah.
That's, you know,
something in the water.
Yeah.
And what's interesting about people may not know, I mean, you were mentioning Mr. McGuinty, was it? McGuinty before? That the age of consent was higher, wasn't it, in Western Australia for quite a long time? It was 21, is that right?
Yes, that's right. Mm. Before the law reform bill, it was 21 for male-on-male sex, well, for, MSM or whatever we're calling it now, but it was 16 for everyone else.
Right. So, and when did that change?
That changed in 2001.
Right.
Hmm. So, because it was one of the last legislations that came in, the law reform bill for gays and lesbians, we sort of, Jim McGuinty said when we spoke to him that he tried to build on the other states and what they'd done, and it sort of pushed Western Australia over the line, and now our law reform bill was better than most of the other states. We actually in WA have equal adoption rights for gays and lesbians.
Yeah.
Well, look, your state has done some incredibly forward thinking in those kinds of terms, but it seems there has been a referendum as well, and you're not so forward thinking when it comes to daylight saving.
Yes, that's right. Forward thinking in some areas, and then this is the fourth time on the same day that the Fremantle by-election was held. We held our fourth referendum in Western Australia on daylight savings, on whether we should have it or not, because Western Australians don't like it. I'm not quite sure why. And for the fourth time, it was voted no. So Western Australia will not be turning their clocks back to the 21st. Clocks forward to the 21st century.
So what would you have to have done? Put them forward 3 hours?
No. We were...
Because you're quite a long way away over there, aren't you?
I think that was part of the no campaign, it would just go 1 hour, but they were saying that if it would in fact mean that they were 3 hours behind or even further behind the eastern seaboard.
Oh.
I think that was part of the no campaign.
Up. Well, it was part of the No campaign. It was part of the Yes campaign, actually, that it would even us up. It would even us up because we're going to change our clocks forward, just like the eastern states do. But in voting No in summer now, we'll be three hours behind the east, whereas if we had done daylight savings, we would be 2 hours behind you guys at all.
Oh, I see. Right.
Oh, so look, you guys obviously like to do things differently. Now, the last story you wanted to talk to us tonight, Amy, is about a gay man, the owner of Elena's Chicken Store, who killed his partner in their penthouse because he wanted to leave him for a younger man, and he's been found guilty. Is that correct?
Yeah, Mr. Gerardus Heine, he's actually a millionaire. He's not just an owner of the Leonard's Chicken Store. He's the owner of the franchise in Western Australia.
So he's the rooster.
That's right. And he and his partner, Frank Chanchosi, owned the franchises. They've been lovers for 25 years. And then Mr. Heine met a younger man who's his name isn't being released, and a 20-year-old man decided he wanted to be with him, so killed his partner of 25 years, allegedly, in their penthouse, $4 million penthouse apartment.
So what's happening with the trial? Is it still continuing, or is it over?
The trial is set down for 3 weeks, so we're right in the middle of it. We've gone through about 7 days, and we're following it very closely here. So we're about on the 7th day, and the boyfriend, the younger lover of Mr. Heine, has been called in for evidence for the last 2 days. He's been up on the stand, and it's been morbidly interesting.
I bet it has. I bet.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to have to leave it there, Amy, but thank you so much for joining us on the line tonight. We appreciate getting the news from the West.
No worries.
Coming up, we're going to talk to Tim Wright, who's right here with us in the studio. Hey, Tim, welcome.
Thank you.
Tim's from the National Day of Action Equal Love campaign, and you're going to tell us all about what's coming up this year, when it is, and how we can get involved, right?
Yeah, well, this year it's on August the 1st, right across the country. We're focused entirely on same-sex marriage. In the past, the campaign's looked at broader issues of relationship recognition and equal entitlements under federal law, but obviously that isn't an issue anymore since November last year when the laws were changed. We sense that there's quite a bit of momentum behind this issue this year, particularly because of developments in Sweden and the US, but also because of the changes to entitlements laws, people have been able to kind of unify behind this issue.
So do you think is your reasoning is that marriage is kind of the last bastion of anti or any sort of anti sentiment against our couplings?
Against couplings.
For want of a better word?
Certainly not the last frontier against gays, but in terms of law reform, it's one of the last frontiers so far as relationship recognition goes. But, of course, there are other issues like adoption, which I expect will take a little bit longer.
Because the Equal Love rallies have been in the lay of the last, because you've done them for 5 years now, six?
Yeah, so this is the 5th anniversary of the marriage ban.
So they've pretty much, most of them, the ones that I've attended, have been like a mass wedding ceremony. Are you going to be doing that again?
Yep.
Okay.
We're trying to set a world record for the largest mass illegal wedding.
Okay.
Of course, it's not really illegal in the sense that we're not going to be arrested for it, but it's certainly not legally recognised.
Okay. Well, I'm just going to read out an SMS that we just got, which raises a point that we're going to talk to about attendance. John has sent in a message that says, Equal Love campaign is a dud. Last year, less than 100 people turned up. How do you respond to that?
Oh, we certainly hope to change that this year. We had a trivia night as a fundraiser for the National Day of Action, and we attracted about 160 people. So if 160 people turn up to our fundraiser events, then I assume that we'll get quite a few more than that to the rally. We're expecting a turnout of at least 1,000 in Melbourne, possibly more in Sydney, which is where the National ALP conference is taking place.
Is there any risk that with the changes that did happen last year that some people might think that a lot of the battles are over and you might have a sort of hard time convincing people to sort of get up after the last batch of campaigning and considering that the federal government is really staunchly no on marriage?
No, I don't think so. I think that marriage remains a really important issue to a lot of people, partly because they want to enter into marriages themselves, but also because they want... they realise that law reform can change people's attitudes towards same-sex relationships, that it has a potential impact on public opinion.
Well, what do you say to the notion that that getting legal equality is something that does fire people up, whereas marriage is probably one of the biggest divisive issues in our community?
I don't think it is a hugely divisive issue. We've got a lot of people in our campaign who don't want to get married themselves, don't even think that marriage is particularly important, but are fully behind the campaign because they believe in equality and they believe that people should have the choice to marry. And you sometimes hear people saying, well, look, we've made the decision not to get married, but in fact no one in the queer community has made that decision because they currently don't have the option to marry. They don't have that choice to make, and that's really what our campaign is about, giving people the choice.
Well, we hear all the time that gay marriage would just be a pale imitation of straight marriage. But do you think that is the case? Do you think there's a danger that people, when they think of gay marriage, they see two men walking down the aisle, one of them wearing a veil? And how can you change people's perceptions of that? And what is wrong with say, just settling for civil unions?
What's wrong with settling for civil unions is that we would create a system of relationship apartheid, different systems, and that reinforces the message that there's something intrinsically different between straight couples and gay couples.
And yet marriage has always been a religious thing. And it seems like we're buying into a religious argument here.
I don't think marriage is a religious thing in Australia. A majority of couples wouldn't see it that way. I think that the religious significance of marriage belongs to only a very small minority of people.
In terms of the legislation too, I mean, that was what the campaign is marking, as far as I know, is the repealing of a piece of legislation. So in that simple sense, it's a legislative issue then. Enforcing marriage is between a man and a woman in 2004, the government legislated to make that law.
Yeah, so the government changed the Marriage Act, and it's very much a legislative decision. It's not a popular decision. I mean, we've got 60% of people in Australia who support same-sex marriage, and yet the government or the parliament won't act.
But it won't act because it's a government that has a fundamental Christian religious background to it. That's why Rudd won't legitimise it.
Kevin Rudd certainly does. There are some people in the Labor Party who do support same-sex marriage. They've spoken to us in private. The problem is that very few of them were willing to speak up publicly about it. So the purpose of our campaign is to try to... in one sense, motivate them to speak publicly, because I think there's potentially, possibly a majority of people in the Labor Party who could get behind this.
So in terms of grassroots people who want to get married, support the idea of others getting married, but not necessarily want to do it themselves, as you pointed out, give us the details. When is it on, and where can people go to get more information?
1st of August, Federation Square at 1 p.m. Hopefully the largest equal love rally to date.
Right.
It's going to be, there's going to be entertainment, but it's very much about getting our message across. And as I said, the ALP National Conference is happening the same day. So okay. This is about getting our message to the politicians.
And is there a website people can go to?
Yep, www.equallove.info. Two L's in the middle there.
Equallove.info. Thank you very much for your time, for coming into the studio,
Thank you.
Tim.
It's been
great
a pleasure.
To meet you. Okay, well, that's it for another week. My guests tonight were Abigail Elliott from Q&A Victoria, Stevie Clayton from ACON, Corey Earlham from the Australian Coalition for Equality, Tim Wright from the National Day of Action Equal Love Rally, God, that's a mouthful, and journalist Andy Noonan from Southern Star and MCV's Andrew Shaw. Our ever amiable producer is Bianca Johnston, and Whiz Bang technical production by Michael Bayliss. I'm Cathy Anderson, and I'll see you again next week with another edition of The Rainbow Report.
This has been a Joy 94.9 News and Current Affairs presentation.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.